Hello, this is Blima Burchett. I'm the Director of Marketing at Aparo, and you are listening to The Aparo Effect, where we talk about all things related to increasing the capacity of nonprofits in Charlotte, North Carolina. Today, I'm joined by one guest, Ross Feldman. And Ross, I'm going to pass it to you to introduce yourself.
Hello, my name is Ross Feldman. I'm the Customer Success Leader at CCTP Tech here in Charlotte, North Carolina. And we also have an office in Charleston, South Carolina.
Thank you for joining me today. I'm very excited. So today we're going to talk a little bit about you, your career journey in technology. We're going to talk about how community service fits into that career journey for you. And then we're going to announce something new that we're launching together for our nonprofit. So Ross, I'll ask you, you know, look way back. Like what are some of your earliest memories of?
My earliest memories of technology are dial-up and the days of your word processing program was on one floppy disk and your file was saved on another floppy disk. It was a different time and a different place. And though the tech has changed, the needs have not changed of everybody using tech in their everyday lives.
I remember those days very well too, very much, very much. A group of us yesterday were just doing that like modem crashing noise for the connection. So tell me, what was it that made you, right? Back in those days, things were frustrating. Things were cumbersome and frustrating, but something inside you said, I like this. This feels right.
I've always been curious and a tinkerer. So I've always wanted to know why things were the way they were. And I was always trying to figure it out. My parents had a small business and they had tech they needed help with. And it just became natural. They needed their computer to start working faster. That was me. They needed the internet set up. That was me. They had a website. That was me. And I became all things tech. And I started small business in the beginning. And so it was just sort of natural that I was always curious and I'm still curious. It still hasn't stopped years later.
Were you out of college when you started supporting your parents?
I was seven.
I'm sorry, you were how old?
Seven. I was seven when I started.
Okay, so I left way too many years ahead. So in what way were you supporting them as a technologist when you were seven?
I was literally, they had a compact computer, had 4 gigs of hard drive space on a dial-up AT&T modem. And they needed to send, receive invoices, and they had a fax. And I guess I was just built with a silicon chip in my mouth. And so it just all came naturally to me.
That is hilarious. So what did you go on to study in school?
I studied software and information systems at the great UNC Charlotte here in Charlotte. I got to be an intern at a conglomerate here in Charlotte on their help desk. And that was a great trial by fire. I got to learn a lot about enterprise technology systems and the way that everything interconnects and who does what and why. And I was always curious. I always asked questions. I volunteered internally. I would always be like, what can I do to help? So servers have to be racked and stacked and networked and wired. And the guys who had to do that, those senior engineers, never wanted to do any of that legwork. It was beneath them. And I was like, hey, I've never pulled fiber. Can I go pull fiber? And they're like, you want to pull fiber? I was like, yeah, I'd love to pull fiber. I've never done that before. I need to connect a host into the main system. Okay, cool. And again, this was all very tedious work, but as an intern, as that new young guy, I really wanted to learn the things, and that allowed me the opportunity to see how everything worked.
Well, so was that your first, that was like your first real job?
First real corporate job, yes. Yeah.
Fantastic. And was that just one summer internship, or was that, did that last some time?
That was right out of high school, before college. And before that, my summers were spent with the YWCA here in Charlotte, Urban League of Charlotte and Girl Scouts. I was teaching computers to the different kids in that program for summer camp. I was teaching them how to build, how to support, how to rebuild the different pieces, components, how to use different office products, just kind of teaching them everything I knew.
Wow, so you discovered that beautiful intersection of nonprofit and technology at a very young age.
Yep.
Wow, and that stayed with you, right?
Absolutely, still till today.
Right, and you've prioritized making nonprofits since then. So that's a lot of years. Why is it important to you?
I love my community. I love giving back to the community. I've always loved teaching. I live for that aha moment. It's when I'm showing something to somebody and they're like, oh, that's how it works. I was just teaching a class today and I shown someone Windows key left, which locks the windows to the left. And then Windows key right locks the other window to the right so they can drag and drop between two windows. They have used PCs for a while and never even knew that feature. And they had that just this morning, that aha moment. And that's what I live for.
I need to do that. It's the window. What does key right and key left mean?
Exactly. So you've got your arrow keys on your keyboard, the up, down, left, right, yeah, that are all next to each other. So you hold the Windows key and you hit left and it locks the window to the left. And then you select the other window and you Windows key right. It locks it to the right. So you can do the side by side.
That word key was throwing me off, but I totally get it because I'm doing it now.
There you go.
I love that because I know there's people who are so good at just dragging things around their screen with their mouse and their trackpad or whatever. And I can't, it never works for me. Like, oh, just snap it. Just snap it. I can't do
it. Snap it.
Now you've extended my toolkit. That is fantastic. We need to do a whole class on just like keyboard shortcuts.
Keyboard shortcuts. Absolutely.
Well, because I mean, the simplest little things can change the way you work, right? Like I work with a document and something I'm changing on the website all the time. And being able to set those two things up so I could look at them, often I just go and grab another device because I just can't deal with the two things. Have changed.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. So great. So tell me, share some other highlights that in your career journey, then and now, where you are at Carolina.
So I've had my corporate job. I've also had a small business being a consultant for small businesses for the same time that I've had my corporate job. And the opportunity came about when I was working with Aparo and working with the business owner of CC. Pete Tech, who is now my boss. We were working on a partnership between my company and his company, and he needed someone to come in and do customer success for his company. So he offered me a job, and that's where I am today. And the question is, what is customer success? Well, you always have that IT guy that you talk to about, hey, my computer's not working, break, fix sort of thing. But what customer success is about is digital advisory, digital strategy. Many corporations have the C-suite. You have your CEO, your CFO, maybe your chief diversity officer, chief marketing officer, but you need that CIO, the CTO, that tech, that information person at the top to help you with your technology platform. What do you have today? How much are you spending? What are you using? Where's your business going? So what we do is we come in, and while we're doing that break fix and your network and your security, I come in to be able to work with your strategy, really talk to the owner or decision maker about what technology you have today and what you need for your future growth. And even with the nonprofits, we always talk about, even though it's not about profit, there's still revenue. And with revenue, there's expenses. With expenses, there's technology. So as much as technology can run a business, technology also runs your nonprofit. So we need to talk about, I have a nonprofit I'm talking to that has both Google Meet and Zoom, and they're spending extra money on Zoom where Google Meet will actually do most of what they need, but they've never had that conversation. They just assumed they need both. So having that conversation with the executive director and then with the rest of the team explaining, hey guys, you actually don't need Zoom, and showing them where the use case comes in to come in with Google Meet instead. But without having that conversation, they would have never known.
Yeah, right. I do. I hear a lot from people like, why do nonprofits even need technology? And I hear expensive, they should be focusing on their programming. Like, and their service, investing in it. Like, is it expensive? Is it worth the? Is it worth it?
And that's the thing, is you're talking about, you need that technology, but also you need to monitor your spend on that technology as well.
Yeah. So tell me, are you working mostly with nonprofits, mostly with businesses, a little bit this and that?
We've got a nice 50-50 set up between for-profit businesses and nonprofits. We really love working with our nonprofits, and we like to help wherever we can. So there's a lot of having that social responsibility and growing in the community. And even in our handbook, we're actually donating some of our working hours into community building. So it's actually part of our culture, which is what really got me on board with this team, was their love of nonprofits and helping them with their technology, as well as building the community around us.
Oh, that's great. Will you be doing some of those hours with Aparo?
We have, absolutely. We have with Memory Movement, Raptor Center, a few different other ones, yep.
Good, and you'll be continuing.
Of course.
Good, we heard you. We heard it right here. We heard the commitment. That's fantastic. Can you share some highlights of your moments as an Aparo volunteer and some of the work you've done?
Yeah, the Raptor Center is one that really hit home for me. Jim Warren, who recently passed, was their executive director. He's an old family friend. My dad did volunteering with the YMCA, the Macquarie Y, when Jim was there. And then they needed a SharePoint administrator from Aparo to help move their files. And I was that SharePoint administrator. And then Jim made the connection of who I was, who he was, and he just started bawling. Because, you know, we just didn't realize we were, you know, all the same people in the same room yet again. And that was a very close moment for me. And, you know, since I grew up in Charlotte, I've visited the Raptor Center. So to help them with their technology is just this epic fulfillment for me, that it's like, hey, you did something for me, I get to do something for you. And with their efficiencies, it means that they're able to do more of their mission, which is really just, it fills my heart every single time I could do anything for the nonprofits to get them to fulfill their mission.
Oh, that's fantastic. I know I talked to you when you were doing Beds for Kids, and like the metrics on that project, I remember, so because of the work you did, and just, I remember you were saying that it was just, wasn't even so complicated, but I think you had helped them figure out, change something in the way that they were distributing the beds and thinking through mm-hmm. something. And it was a huge lift to the number of beds that they had anticipated for over.
Yeah, they it was great because I was part of a networking group here in Charlotte that donated their charity golf tournament money towards Beds for Kids. 6 years ago. So coming back full circle and helping them with their IT strategy was epic for me. And I also got a chance to ride along and deliver some furniture with some of them, which, you know, these are our neighbors. Like, I drive past these houses all the time. This is my Charlotte community. It's my people. I'm here with them. So again, I can't fill my trunk full of furniture and drive and deliver. So if I can help the mission that they're doing be more successful, then I'm able to impact the community even more.
Great. We're very lucky to have you. So let's talk a little bit about the support that you're offering to the nonprofit community, and what they can do to get answers to some questions.
I have always loved Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, where the people call in with their car advice. And I thought it would be great for our nonprofits to do the same thing, where they can reach out with their technology questions, and we can have similar idea in the podcast is ask Ross, ask the IT guy. This is a nagging question I've always had about my technology, and we can try to come back once a quarter to be able to talk more about answering those questions. We could talk all day about technology, but I love it when the actual audience brings back the questions so we can talk about what they want to hear versus what we might want to say. So I would love to have your audience members send in their technology questions that we can answer for them.
Perfect. And I think the best way for folks to do that is to reach us at marketing@aparo.org. You can send your questions and forward them. Ross and we'll consolidate. And then the next time, and maybe we'll figure out some way that we can have someone with a lot of questions even join us and just send in those questions over to Ross. Excellent. What are some of the things, Ross, that you are there? Just let's set a tone and give some examples of the type. Like, what do you hear over and over again from nonprofits? You know, I think certainly I hear people about prioritizing the investment, you know, will it be too hard for us to sustain? Is it worth the time to take a pause here? Can we take the pause? And just nervousness around all of it. Like, it's working okay. Should I really invest the time to take a pause and the money here? Type of thing I hear a lot.
The number one advice I can give everyone is something called multi-factor authentication or two-factor authentication. That is when you log in on a website and it sends you a code or it pops up on an app and you have to hit okay to approve. That second layer of security is what you need to implement, not just today, but yesterday. If for whatever reason your password gets out because of you accidentally typed it into a malicious website, that gives you that extra layer of protection.
Uh-oh, Ross, I think we lost you.
No.
Uh-oh, there you are.
Sorry about that. That extra layer of account, that extra layer of security will protect your account in case that somebody tries to log in as you. And then you know that you need to reset your password because someone attempted to log in you. So multi-factor authentication is number one. I just had a lead come in this morning. They were spearfished, which means that somebody sent them an email. They clicked on it. They put their password in, got into their mailbox and started hacking away. If they had multi-factor authentication enabled, they would have known that someone was trying to log in their mailbox and they would have been able to stop that attack. So multi-factor authentication is always my number one advice.
You just introduced something I haven't heard before, not just phishing, but spear phishing. What's the difference?
Yes. So phishing is, I love the analogy of fishing. You throw your fishing pole in the lake and you wait for a fish to bite. Spear phishing is when you literally take a sharp stick and you stab a fish, right? So with phishing, it's we send out a blanket email saying, hey, click on this, give me your password. Spear phishing is, hey, Blima, your boss, Kim, needs you to click on this link, right? I took a whole bunch of information I have and I specifically targeted you with an email and this is urgent and you have to click here, right? So that spear phishing is that direct attack instead of being a more broad general attack.
Okay, very interesting. And what do you say to people who push back to say it's inconvenient, it slows me down, it's gonna take me 10 times longer to do my work, I'm not doing it.
Exactly. And those are people I will try my best to convince otherwise. And, you know, those are probably people who don't lock their car and don't lock their house and they leave their wallet out on tables. I can't stop that. But I want to encourage them to think about the risk, especially in business. When we have the nonprofits, these donor databases, there's a lot of personal information in the donor database. You need to safeguard that information. So by doing that one little step of inconvenience, you're keeping the data of your donors safe. And I encourage everyone to be good stewards of the data that they hold.
Oh, yes, absolutely. What's the best way to get started? So let's say I've never set this up before. Should I start with my email? Should I start with my social media? Where should I start and is it easy?
Oh yeah. So if you're Microsoft, you go to a website, which is aka.ms/MFA setup. And that's a shortcut that brings you to the multi-factor authentication setup process. For Google, you go to click to your little icon, you click on manage your Google account, security, two-factor authentication. So if you feel like those steps are too hard, they're very easy to just Google multi-factor Microsoft, multi-factor Google, and see those same steps written out in help articles. And you just put it as an appointment on your calendar. Let's say you have a meeting that ends at 1:30, your next meeting is at 2:00. Make an appointment with yourself at 1:30 to set up multi-factor authentication. And as you said, on your email is a great start. That's where spear phishing happens, is in your mailbox. That's a great attack vector. Putting a PIN on your phone is another good one. Locking your computer with a password is another good one. So there's lots of different things that take a few minutes. And now, of course, it's inconvenient, but it also is important to the safety and security of your account.
Perfect. Look at that. We even got, like, we went into deep dive into one of the tips. So perfect.
Of course.
So I think that sets an example of the type of conversations that we can have and the types of questions that we can address. So those two shortcuts that you mentioned to get into multi-factor authentication, we're going to put into the show notes.
Excellent.
You're going to send them to me, Ross, right? Because I tried really fast to write down what you said. But I didn't.
I'll send them to you. Sounds good.
Thank you so much. I am excited to connect with you again, and we will post on social media when our next one will be coming up, and I'll set out a reminder to let people know that they can send our questions. And fantastic. Thank you so much for joining me. Everybody tune in for the next episode of The Aparo Effect and start thinking about those questions. Well, you can send them in anytime, but I'll let you know when you on again. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.